Welcome one and all once again to do with an episode 103. It's been a very light news week, but as always, there's that one story that kind of encapsulates the entire game industry for an entire week, and I think that's going to be the centerpiece of the show. But before we get
there...
What could it possibly be? But before we get there, let's introduce our panel. We have Daniel.
Hello!
And we have Jason.
Hello, hello.
So yeah, before we get to a certain game that people may or may not be able to play recently, we are going to talk about what we have been playing recently, and we're going to kick it off with Jason, who has been playing something new.
Yeah, I've been playing a game that came out this week, which was the new Tomb Raider reboot. And I have to say, pretty impressed so far.
It looks really good. Very good.
It's really... Oh, man, where do I start? I'll start with... I was expecting it to be a lot like Uncharted, because obviously, you know, you have a protagonist that's an archaeologist, and there's a lot of traversal, and there's some gunplay.
So you mean Tomb Raider?
Yeah, right. Like Uncharted, which is based off Tomb Raider, the original, whatever. But it's actually... not that much like Uncharted. I mean, obviously they have similar elements, but the emphasis is on more on exploration and stuff like that, rather than, you know, like you're never doing a puzzle with an artifact. Puzzles are always like rooms, like kind of, you know, like an Assassin's Creed or a Zelda or something. And also along the lines of Zelda or the Arkham games or Metroid, you collect new and upgraded equipment throughout the game, and that unlocks, you know, new areas you can explore. Like, I just got the shotgun, so now I can blast through these thin barriers that have barbed wire on them. Or, you know, earlier I got a climbing axe, so I could climb up certain surfaces. So it's, and in that way, the world kind of opens up, and also kind of like Arkham, the game takes place on this huge island. And then parts of the island are broken up into smaller areas that aren't quite... So it's not really open world, but it kind of has a... Within these sub-areas, it's kind of... It's a more open. Like, there's a lot of different ways to go through the level. You'll come back through some of the more major ones. You'll unlock, you know, when you come back with better equipment, you'll be able to go to new parts of the area. And there's random collectibles strewn about, like any kind of adventure game. And... I don't know, it's really good, it's really interesting, the graphics are beautiful, the story and the voice acting is really good, like, it, everything feels really fresh about it, which is ironic because it's Tomb Raider, it's one of, you know, the older franchises in gaming, but it's definitely an interesting experience so far.
Okay, I'm curious, because I actually forgot it had, have you tried out any of the multiplayer?
I have not yet, and... I don't know. I probably won't until I finish the single-player game.
I was just very curious, because I already forgot it had multiplayer until the thing came out. Like, Microsoft, the Xbox is getting the first DLC exclusive, I guess, this month.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I guess it could work. I mean, the gun mechanics are pretty good. I think you responded to me on Twitter. Like, I had said something like, oh, this game's at its best when it's not doing the gun, which I still think is true when you're doing the environmental puzzles and you're navigating all the areas and looking for secrets, or even when there are bad guys, you know, being able to sneak up on them or take them out one by one, or, you know, distract them by shooting an arrow into the wall behind them so they turn around and stuff like that. I think that's when the game is at its best. And I'm actually getting to this part right now. I'm probably 2/3 or so of the way through, which is just a wild guess, but it's starting to throw a lot more just, you know, rate vanilla gunfights at me with just like waves of enemies, which is, I mean, the gun mechanics are pretty solid. It's a little like the enemies aren't bullet sponges like Uncharted, which is nice. They, you know, they take probably 3 or 4 shots to go down, or like a well-placed headshot. And the variety of weapons is pretty good. I still, my favorite weapon to use is the bow, but when there's a lot of enemies, you have to switch to like rifles, and the melee combat's pretty well integrated. I don't know. It's a very well-designed game. So I could see it maybe multiplayer being fun. That's still my least favorite part, even though it's still good. But yeah, that's Tomb Raider.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it looks, it kind of, I think I would prefer it to Uncharted, because Uncharted's a very sort of gung-ho action movie kind of game.
I very much prefer it to Uncharted.
And Lara's more sort of methodical, and well, Tomb Raider is more methodical, and the writing is very good.
Yes.
Despite the somewhat, voice acting from Lara. It seems like she's Australian sometimes. Yeah. And
yeah, I had my doubts based on trailers and also the actress. I've seen her before in Californication. She was all right, but she, so far, I don't know how far I'm in now, probably 7-8 hours, but she's done a pretty good job, I think, for the most part. And I don't know, it's weird. She does talk to herself a lot.
a lot of characters do that. I mean, I think the first game I actually played that did that was the Prince of Persia game, the reboot from Last Generation. I actually enjoy that if the characters are kind of reacting to the situation around them. It's a decent form of storytelling because...
Yeah, I mean, it gets stuff across, and, you know, when there's no other person for them to talk to, it's like...
Yeah.
But it's still... And sometimes it makes sense, you know, she's about to make this big jump or something, and she's like, okay, I can do it, I can do it. But, or if she's analyzing ruins, you know, she's a... It makes sense for her to talk it out, at least based on how we've been trained with Indiana Jones and what have you. But she'll also just be like, I don't know, she'll just start talking about stuff to herself, and it's kind of funny.
From what I've seen, though, is it seems like sometimes Tomb Raider is a bit too violent and too gruesome. I know there's the whole spike thing that people are going on about, and I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, it is weird. It can be very gruesome at times, and it is a little, I don't know, because it is a little jarring, but it kind of plays into the gritty,
vibe
they're kind of going for. I mean, I agree, it's not really necessary, it's a little bit over the top, but, and maybe it's just because I haven't seen it too much, because I haven't really been dying outside of, sometimes in the firefights when I just get exposed, but other than that,
there's one bit where you sort of cruise it, like you fall into a river and it's really fast and stuff, and there's wooden spikes, and if you get impaled on them, it goes right through her head from the chin upwards.
Yeah,
that I was like, ah, oh, that wasn't.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that
in the video, so it kind of less impact, I guess, for me. But the first time I saw that, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, I think, what was I going to say? Yeah, I've always seen the reviews for it. Some of it seems like that stuff, but it also seems like this game takes some type of pleasure in beating her up. Like, one of the earlier sequences is her dropping down on a spike, and then they do that later on, where she falls on something, and she impels herself, and it's like, you know? Like, I get that this is tough, but at some point, she just needs to kind of sit there and stop beating her up.
Yeah, she takes a beating in this game. For sure.
And I mean, it's something that we've kind of gotten used to, because a lot of our protagonists in video games this generation just keep on... Like, Drake does the same thing. Drake goes through a lot of stuff, and he'll keep on kicking, and at some point it just makes them seem way too superhuman, because they are supposed to be average Joes.
Yeah.
That's Tomb Raider. I'm curious to hear more. I'll probably pick this up when I think Target is doing a buy two get one free sale in a week and a half.
Yeah, I you know, it's a game I'll probably get on sale as well, because I've just got too much stuff to play. And Age of Empires 2 is coming out next month as well, so.
Yeah, I definitely. Obviously, I'm not finished with it yet, and when I do finish, I'll throw up a review on Nerds on the Rocks. But so far, you know, if I had thrown 60 bucks down on this game, like, I'd be pretty happy. And that's not even touching the multiplayer or anything yet.
Yeah, which I don't know is going to add much.
Expect it to really add much value to me either, but the single player is really, really...
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody talk about it or anything, so there's that. I've been playing Spec Ops the Line because I still have PSN for a couple of weeks and it's a freebie. I played this game because everybody kind of says the same thing. It's not a great shooter, but it has a really compelling story or storytelling.
What's this game?
and I keep playing the game hoping to see where this current story comes through at, and I don't think it's going to happen for me, because I'm up to chapter, I want to say 14 or 15. When did this game come? Yes, I'm okay, so it's still within our window, for I won't spoil it, but basically, everybody has turned on you at this point in the game. And I guess at some point you're supposed to feel bad for the decisions you make in the game, but it's not like the game ever really gives you a chance to make those decisions.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of one of those things where it's kind of heavy-handed, like, you know, what, you killed all these innocent people, but yeah, you told me to. Like, it wasn't like, oh, you don't have to do this.
From what I've been told, that's kind of the point. And that's what I really don't like about it. It's just like, you know, you don't really have a choice, so it's really not going to affect me as much.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and, you know, video games is different than movies and stuff like that, but it's one of those things where it's kind of heavy-handed. If I'm being forced to do this, like, yeah, you can say, like, oh, you know, this is a state of the video game industry where gamers do stuff where, you know, they never think about their actions and stuff like that. But again, if you didn't give me the option to not do that...
It seems like if it had been a case of, you know, here's a choice, do one thing or the other, and then you pick one and something that you couldn't really have seen that's really bad happens but still makes sense that it did, you know, that's fine. But if you're going to be really heavy-handed and say, oh, this happened, it's bad, even though it's either do bad thing or do other bad thing, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that happens is just a result of either the player not knowing or something that the game's going to do anyhow. So, I mean, again, it gives you, and this, you know, we kind of gone through this before with other games, it gives you the illusion of choices in certain situations, but no matter what you do, it kind of plays out the same way.
And then, so apparently, the game kind of slaps you at the end with some only winning move is not to play thing, and it's kind of like, well, why make it of a game then, you know? It just seems like heavy-handed, and the thing that I couldn't really get past is just how average... The game doesn't try to be a good game at all, really. It just does what it needs to. And to the point where I played the demo, I was like, that's it, I'm done with this game.
I think it's a moderately decent shooter. I mean, it's...
Well, that's the thing, is it does what it needs to do, but it doesn't do anything exceptionally well. And that's kind of what you need to do nowadays, is you need to do something really well.
Yeah, and I have no beef with it. I mean, I've played this game before. it's a very brown shooter, but they actually kind of make use of that. It does have some color, and, you know, the sand is a big theme. It's the setting and stuff like that. It's a cover-based third-person shooter, squad-based, but not co-op. And your teammates, as it always happens, I don't know if I'm happy or sad when this happens, they're not indestructible. They can be downed and you get to revive them. I haven't seen that in a third-person shooter either. But they don't run out of ammo, they don't run out of grenades, and they don't run out of snipers. So, like, no matter what, your teammates always have weapons. Why can't I be the same way? And the other thing I find weird with weapons, and I think this is just a funny design decision, is that you can down enemies but not kill them, and you can go up and execute them. And no matter who you execute or what they had, they will always have ammo for your guns. I just find that funny, because not all of them carry the guns you carry, but they always have ammo when you assassinate them for it. Again, I think it's supposed to make you feel bad for assassinating people, I don't know. Or executing people, as they call it. Also, it's the characters are very, very angry, and some of the... I think some of the dialogue choices is odd during certain scenes, but I can't think of a specific example right now. It does have one or two interesting set pieces near the end, but I won't get into that too much because I don't want to... Well, again, it's been about a year, but there's one I particularly like where you're trying to protect your two squad mates from across the across a mall, and you have like a gun turret, and you're basically... It's kind of like a 2D plane, and they're trying to get upstairs, and you're trying to cover them by shooting people as they come and take them out. That was a fun little diversion, a nice little set piece. And, I mean, this is an old game, I mentioned it before, but, you know, Daniel reminded me of this as well. I finished Halo 4 for the first time this week. I know, it's been like five months.
Oh, yay! Where did you stop playing at?
Well, it wasn't... It wasn't necessarily anything that had to do with the game. It was just the fact that my internet connection that we have experienced in the past has been really shady for the last couple of weeks. Well, the last couple of months, I should say. It's actually been working better, so I finished it with my friend this past week because we had a stable enough connection where both of us can actually shoot stuff. I mean, I guess it's different for single player, but the final boss is awful for your co-op because you don't do anything. So it just looks like an extended cutscene, and my friend was telling me, no, I crawled up to the dude and I planted a grenade in him. I'm like, nope, it just looked like a cutscene to me.
I just thought it was awful, I hate the story of that game, so, you know, I guess I'm a bit biased.
Yeah, I like the story. Well, I had some issues. In general, I liked the game a lot until the ending, and I agree. The ending kind of was just like, why did that? What?
Again, part of it was because I was half paying attention to it, I'll be honest, but I thought the story was kind of stupid because all I heard was Katana shouting about the composer and the didact like every 10 minutes. And I'm like, I have no idea what either one of those two things are. The composer turns out to be the main bad guy.
The composer turns out to be the Deus Ex Machina and the didact's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so I had that reverse.
Yeah.
And then Cortana ends up just kind of billion on Chief. I did like the part with the space jet, the shuttle, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I wish they had kind of extended that to be kind of, like, it was just kind of driving around. Like, there was some stuff with the turrets and stuff, but it wasn't very action-oriented. It kind of reminded me of a good Star Wars game.
The thing I have with that bit is just like, oh, they had a spaceship bit in Halo Reach, so let's have a spaceship bit.
Yeah, yeah. I preferred it than the one in Halo 3, to be honest.
Reach, you mean?
Whichever one had it. As overall, it's not the best campaign. I still think that belongs to Reach and ODST. I know ODST isn't one that people like as much, but, they, you know, ODST has a much more personal story, I think, and I enjoy it for that. And this one, I think the new enemies were okay at first, and then it just kind of became old hat because they only had three designs. I think it was the dogs, it was the giant dudes, and it was the little flying turrets.
Yeah.
Oh well, yeah. For the Prometheus.
My problem with them was when you compare them to the Covenant, right? The Covenant have each of the different types. They have very different behavior patterns. So the grunts will run away if you kill their elite, and they'll try to swarm you and run at you with grenades and stuff. Whereas we had the dog things that just the Prometheus that just ran at you for the most part, and then there was the big guys that just ate bullets and teleported every so often. And it's like, oh
yeah, I mean they were probably the most interesting.
It got to the point for me where I was just picking up the LMGs at any time I could and just shooting them in the face as much as possible. Yeah,
same. And the flying ones are really annoying. They were just bullets, and they just keep zipping around.
And I didn't know they spawned enemies until near the end. So go figure. I really wasn't paying attention to this story, apparently. It's kind of weird because, like, at the end of the game, they're like, now that you beat the game, go try it multiplayer. And I'm just like, I've sunk in, like, over 100 hours into multiplayer. I don't need to be told. I should go check that out now.
Yeah.
That does remind me, I've also been playing another game this week. I've been playing Dead Island. I got a lot more time in with my friends. And I gotta say, I'm really a fan of this game so far. Tonally, it has nothing to do with whatever they showed for that reveal trailer. And I would even go as far as to say the opening sequence has nothing to do with the game as far as tone goes so far. Like, the opening sequence is like you're in a hotel room, you're in a hotel, secluded hallways, it's dark, it's moody, you're being chased, you're kind of defenseless. And then the game opens up and it's like you're on a beach and it's sunny and it's bright outside and you have
The hotel bit, you know the little girl that falls in the trailer?
Yeah.
And that's where you see her in the hotel bit. That's the only purpose for the hotel bit.
Yeah, because you have to pay through the hotel bit to open up co-op and stuff like that. And I was explaining to my friends because I'm like, yeah, it makes no sense because totally it doesn't fit the rest of the game so far.
No, the rest of the game's kind of a B movie, and the hotel bit just like just this bit where I'm doing nothing.
Yeah, some of it is kind of cheesy and hokey. There's one mission where you have to find a 80s teddy bear.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're concerned about during a zombie apocalypse is your teddy bear. There's another that we make fun of who's thirsty for water.
Oh, thank God. And when you give her some.
Yeah, and it's like, she's at a beach. You can literally walk out to your backyard and find water. And granted, it may not taste great, but it's water. And yeah, I mean, it's been fun. I enjoy the fact that you can kind of split up. For the most part, there are certain objectives, certain missions that you need everybody together for, and that kind of pisses me off because you don't know it until you get there. So there's been like one or two missions. Like we all kind of go through. Like right now, we have two bases. We have the lighthouse and we have the I forget the other one, the beach house, the lifeguard station.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll just kind of go around. We'll all take missions, and then it's like, okay, you know, two of us will go here, two of us will go there. You kind of split the map, pick up any missions along the way. This way, you get more done because XP and everything's shared between the group, and that's fine. And then what happens is like, oh, you have to go here, and like we went to the lighthouse because you have, and it's like, oh, you need everybody here, so we had to go back. By this time, we had a car though, so you know, we drove back. We helped them out with their mission, and then we drove back there, and then. You have to go back to where they were because you have to find this guy who's trapped in the basement or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun game. It's really, really, I'm really messed up in the head the way I beat up these zombies. Just because I like using the sharp weapons because you can take off their body parts.
Yeah.
And the kick rules all of doing the kick. But yeah, it's a fantastic game as far as co-op goes. I honestly would not play it in single player. It just doesn't seem like the type of game that would be as enjoyable.
No, it's definitely not. It's kind of a slog to go through if you're actually playing it on your own. Yeah, so I played Borderlands 1 through on my own, and that me calling Dead Island a slog is saying something.
I see. Borderlands 1, I enjoyed Borderlands 1 on my own. The only time I would do it is, like, if I needed to level up because I was a bit behind my friends.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, if you know the areas, if you know where you get into, it's not so bad. Here it's just kind of, like, because the zombies randomly spawn, and it's really hard to kind of keep an eye on your front, your back, your left, and your right. And, you know, it's a much slower pace, and it's, like, you don't want to go slow because it's a wide area, and sometimes we have to go you know, cut meters away because that's the metric they use for some odd reason. But yeah, it's a it's a fun title for co-op. Sadly, I'm only playing it once or twice a week because we made a promise that we'll all play it together. So yeah, apparently I've been playing a lot of games recently. Go figure. What about you, Daniel? Have you been playing anything?
I have been playing Far Cry 3, and this game is fantastic. Everything Martin said about it is true. In fact, the only thing that I don't like about this game is something that's not even a problem that is caused by the game. It's bloody Uplay, and I hate it so much. You know, seriously.
Isn't Uplay, you don't really have to use it though, right? You're playing on PC though.
Yeah, I'm on PC. So, Uplay on PC. On 360 and stuff, it's just this thing. There's kind of like extra achievements and stuff, and whereas on PC is basically like Steam, just a whole lot less convenient. You can't update your game through it. What you have to do is you launch the game, and the game goes, "Oh, I've got an update." So you download it, and then you have to install the update like you would any other program. And it's just like, why can't Uplay just do this for me? You know? And then, so this achievement system. Like you get it, like you get what they call units, which are kind of like gamer score for doing separate certain things, and that's fine. But for Far Cry 3, all of the rewards that you get, because you get like tangible rewards, they're not tangible, but you get extra stuff in the game. All the rewards for Far Cry 3 don't cost any points, so why are they there? Why have I got 120 points in Far Cry 3 if I can't spend any of them because all of the rewards are free? I don't get it. But otherwise, the game is great. And there's nobody playing multiplayer on PC. I don't care because I don't play Far Cry 3 for multiplayer.
Does it have multiplayer?
It does. It's got co-op and it has a proper competitive multiplayer.
How does that work?
From what I've seen of it, it's just a rip-off of Call of Duty, but in PC, there's nobody playing it, so it doesn't work at all.
Fair enough.
But the game is great, and I love it. Before, if you just said, oh, Ubisoft are coming out with this new game, I'd be like, yeah, I don't care. Ubisoft don't make anything that I care about. That's changed now, because Far Cry 3 is excellent.
Ubisoft is one of my favorite third-party developers.
No, I'm not saying they're bad or anything. They just don't... Until now, they didn't make anything that I actually cared about.
What's the hardware you're playing on?
I'm playing on an AMD FX 8350 and an AMD Radeon 6870. I've turned quite a lot down because the game's a bit weird when it comes to running above 60 frames a second and stuff. Like most games, you just turn VSync on and that solves it. Whereas not this game, it's kind of weird. So I turned a bunch of stuff down, and I turned I've got GPU buffering on 5, and it seems to be okay. The game doesn't look, if you turn stuff down, the game doesn't look any worse, really. So, you know. But most people should be able to play Far Cry 3 fine. It's a good PC version.
Isn't the PC version a superior version?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But like Ubisoft have been a bit meh with their PC versions as of late.
But I feel like Far Cry and Crysis are kind of those definitive PC games that console gamers just
kind
of get at
Far
the bone.
Was originally a Crytek game, so
yeah, that's what they've always got a big graphical showcases that dumb down for the consoles.
Well, and to give you a contrast to how I think about this game compared to Far Cry 2, I stopped playing Far Cry 2 after 20 minutes. That's how much I hated that game. And I love Far Cry 3. The story is very well written. Vass is a very good, very good character. And the game is truly one of those games where you can approach situations in any way you want, even if that involves throwing C4 at sharks. If that's what you want to do, the game says, yeah, you can go and do it. And unlike most other games as well, the game gives you an open world that you actually want to go out and do stuff in. I think for the first 6 or 7 hours, I was completely ignoring missions, just climbing radio towers and liberating outposts. And, you know, I didn't give a crap about the story, and then I started playing the story missions. Oh, these are really good as well. So,
yeah, I'm really... I want to play that at some point. It's just a matter of making time.
You've probably seen the mission where you set weed on fire with a flamethrower with a dubstep playing in the background. That mission pretty much sums up this game and how ridiculous in a good way it can be. You know,
sounds like Saints Row the Third.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not. It doesn't try to be funny. The story is actually quite serious. But the gameplay, if you want to do a silly thing that you think is within the means of the gameplay, then you can do it, and it, for the most part, works. So, that's Far Cry 3. I've also been playing Persona 4. Chad's not here, so he can't. I haven't been playing it so much as, like, every week we sort of have a night that we sit down, me and my housemate sit down together and we play a game. This week it was Persona 4, because my friend was actually quite hyped for it. And the game does not... The game is very hard. And I know they fixed some things up for the Vita version, because we're playing on the PS2. But the original version is actually quite tough at times. The game does... Like, the game tells you, the first time you sort of encounter one of the dungeons, prepare. And it means it. It means prepare. And there's a certain... The way it kind of works kind of weird. Like, you have a social life and stuff, and you have to build sort of friendships with people. And that ends up paying off in battle, because it's an RPG. And the way that sometimes works is, say, there's one character in particular, and you can go out with him quite a lot, and you can go to the city and stuff, and then he's part of your main party. And sometimes, if say your character's low on health, and if your character dies in a battle, that's it, it's game over. And what can happen is that character, if your friendship is good enough, he'll jump in front of you and he'll take the hit for you, which is really cool. And if your social level with him is not high enough, he won't do that, which is, I kind of like that. And
yeah, that's awesome. It's a new, like, a
it gives me
the mechanic you don't see
stuff that you do.
Yeah.
And also there's so you have to balance your social life and going out into this TV realm to save people. And the way it works is when the fog clears in the TV world, whoever's trapped in there at that time dies and it's game over. So, and whenever the fog is cleared in the TV world, there's fog in the real world. And fog only comes in the real world after more than one day of rain. So you have to keep an eye on the weather forecast, and you have to time, oh, this day I'm going to go out and go to and do like the soccer club at school so I can get more social life. And, you know, this day I'm going to go to the shop and buy stuff from when I've got to go into the TV world. And it's very good at what it does. And it, like I said, it doesn't hold any bars. Like the first boss is very, very challenging if you don't prepare for it properly. And in some ways, the game doesn't really prepare you enough for that. But you kind of look it up and look up how the Persona merging system works, and you get used to it. And that you then know for the rest of the game sort of how you have to balance your social life and actually going into the dungeons and saving people. It's really cool. There's a lot of the bosses are all sort of shadow versions of the characters that reflect what they truly think about life. And the imagery is really cool. You can tell it's made by the same people as Catherine, and it's set in the same universe as Catherine, which is all a good thing. The soundtrack is awesome. There's a reason why Chad likes the Persona series so much, and it's
because he's well weird.
I think he would be proud of you when he hears this podcast.
If any of you actually listen when you weren't on,
it kind of makes me like wish that Persona 4 Golden was on the 3DS, because I plan to get a 3DS, and there is no way on this earth that I'm going to buy a PlayStation Vita for what will be one game, because I wouldn't buy anything else.
I feel like you had this conversation with somebody on Twitter this week.
It was about Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah.
And they told me it's worth it. I'm like, no, it's not. It's really not.
And this is, you know, another discussion. I mean, especially when you have access to it elsewhere.
Yeah, my friend has a PS2 and a PS2 copy of the game, so I could probably play it at some point. And just
you want your own copy.
Yeah, I would like my own copy.
If only your PS3 had backwards compatibility still.
Actually, if the PS3 did have backwards compatibility, that would be more reason for me to go out and get one.
Yeah, yeah. You can always try eBay. But I think that should do it for what we've been saying, which was a lot longer than I expected. Go figure, we've actually been playing video games. Who knew that happens on a video game podcast? But yes, we have news, and we're just going to cut to the first two stories really quickly because they're really non-stories. It's just been a really slow week. The first one was that Activision announced Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows for release this summer on Xbox Live and PSN and Steam. Ironically enough, it's the first four-player online co-op Ninja Turtles game.
Is it a movie tie-in, or is it nothing to do with the movie?
It's so weird, because apparently, according to them, it's based on the Nickelodeon cartoon show, but it looks nothing like that. So, I assume it's probably based off of the movie, which would be even odder, because the movie, it hasn't even begun production, so it would make no sense to have a tie-in game
a year. So it's a case of, let's just squeeze one out before we have to do one for the movie.
What I imagine is that this game was already in production when they got the license, and they're just like, we'll just kind of release it as a cheap downloadable title and get it to work on a next-gen version. The turtles look awful in this game. they try to make them two humans, which defeats the purpose. Yeah. One, they're not adults. They're teenagers. And two, they're turtles. You don't need to make them your humans.
Well, it's kind of in the name, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's they just look hideous, which is odd, because they have really cheap CG-looking models for the cartoon. And I'm not saying the cartoon is cheap, the cartoon's amazing, but they have models that they can use that's pretty cheap to produce, and they are good already. And it would have made sense, because the TV show is hugely popular right now, so you have that built-in audience. Sadly enough, I'm going to buy this game anyhow, because it's a four-player online Ninja Turtles co-op game. And it wasn't even a matter of if or when I'm going to buy it. It's just a matter of me calling dibs on Michelangelo between my friends already. So, we're adults. What can we say? The other news, which I'm sure surprised the world, is that Sony's PlayStation Vita saw a I don't even know what's the term for six times, but it saw an increase of six times the amount of sales after the price drop in Japan. Shocking nobody.
Yeah. They didn't think to do the same for the West either.
Yeah, I'm more curious. I expect it, you know, to get a boom. I'm more curious to see where it stabilizes at. Because if it just kind of, if it at the end of the day, if it only kind of falls like two or three times where it was selling before, I still don't think that's a great system. But we shall see.
Oh, that'd certainly help a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still, you know, price drop for our software is just not, is going to be a short-term gain. And I think Soul Sacrifice is coming out, but after that, it's kind of a dry spirit for them in Japan. But again, we shall see. But yeah, good for them. And I hope they figure it out in the West, because I'm sure it would sell a lot better for $200, especially if that rumored Assassin's Creed game is out again this year. But yes, that is just the appetizer to the main course. The big story of...
Boy, was it a big one. Oh my god.
I don't even know if I want to call it the big story, because there's so many little pieces to this story that keeps on growing and evolving. I mean, I will be upfront, and, you know, we are talking about SimCity and that whole ordeal, but I will be upfront. As of right now, from what I understand, the servers are on, people can play the game and stuff like that, so...
Or more people?
I don't know. I just know that they're on, and some people are saying, well, they can play it.
Yeah, there's some people that can still play it. There are some people that are still getting disconnected every now and then. There are some people that can't at all get in still. It's a massive, massive mess up.
Headache.
Debacle.
Let's start with from the beginning. Let's start. What are we talking about? SimCity, a game that has always online DMR because they wanted to protect
DRM.
From the evil DRM. I've been paying too much yo-yo. They wanted to protect us from the pirates.
And they built the game around the multiplayer aspect. Even if you don't want to play in multiplayer, you kind of have to. So it's a way, it's a sense of, they made the city so much smaller than it has been in previous games, and they made it so in order to succeed, you have to trade resources and rely on other people in this sort of region that have their own cities for resources and stuff. And obviously, I mean, yeah, there are some people that don't want this, because there are some people that just like making massive cities on their own, and I get that. And, you know, evidently if the servers mess up, you know, you can't play the game at all, which is another massive problem.
I think that is the massive problem.
Yeah, so people on launch were seeing a counter which counted down from half an hour, and that's not a counter. That's not, you have to wait half an hour until you can play. It's, you have to wait half an hour until the game will check to see if you can play, and if you can't, you have to wait half an hour after that. So they were like, yeah, we're adding servers and stuff. And, you know, the people that could get in, they were being disconnected after 10, 20 minutes. You know, and then...
It's like going to the amusement park and waiting online and then the ride breaking down. So you have to go back online because...
Yeah, you have to go back in the line right at the end, you know. And people were saying, oh, I want a refund. And EA's like, no, you can't have any refunds. We don't give refunds. When they should have broken that for this, because this is just insane. And since then, EA have disabled game features like the ability to achievements don't work, leaderboards don't work. There's this thing called cheater mode, which makes the game go really fast. That is not a thing at the moment because it puts more stress on the servers. It's insane that what they've have to do. There was a Q&A. There was a Q&A on Twitter, actually, with the CEO of Maxis, and she was like, yeah, we've messed up. She didn't really say anything other than you get a free game. From EA's catalog. And it's just ridiculous.
Which I'm curious how far back that goes. Like, could you get Dead Space 3? I mean, probably not.
Well, I assume that they're going to pick very probably niche games. Like, you'll probably see stuff like Spore.
What they'll do is they'll pick Dead Space 2, Crysis 2. So that means that what will happen is, oh, I like Crysis 2, I'll buy Crysis 3.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that EA's no refunds policy is not good enough, you know. There's no excuse. People bought a product for quite a lot, because SimCity cost quite a lot on Origin, and it didn't work at all.
Okay. But yeah, I was going to say, let's get back, because there's a lot to break down in this story. And I think me and Jason kind of hinted at where we need to start. And that's the fact that for a lot of people, for a vast majority of this week, if not still right now, they can't play the game they bought. It's not that it's broken. It's not that, you know, like parts of the features. They can't play the game at all.
They have no access to it at all. They have access to a menu screen that counts down.
And that's the big issue. That's the one you started with, because right there, you don't buy a product and then by no means, by nothing, anybody who's bought it can't play the game. They can't get access to it because of something on the producer's end. That doesn't work. That doesn't find any business.
No, and any other business on the planet would have, like, any other kind of business would have given a refund for that.
Yeah, you, yeah.
And,
you don't.
And there are laws that protect people from this kind of thing. If you buy something that is, in the EU at least, if you buy something that is
very,
not
very
fit
potentially
purpose,
could be
you
facing a
can
lawsuit.
Force a refund. And yeah, and I encourage people to issue a class action, because it's insane that this happens and EA just get away with it.
See, I think that they won't get I don't know. I'm not an attorney or anything, but I assume they probably won't get sued, because they will contest that you know, like, this, the game isn't broken. It's fundamentally there. It's just, you know, they couldn't anticipate the demand, which I still think is the biggest BS excuse that we've heard. We've been doing this for, what, 10, 15 years now? How is it that nobody can anticipate the demand anymore?
Well, the
ever?
Thing is,
no,
though,
and EA in particular has launch issues with
Every Battlefield
FIFA,
game.
Battlefield, you know, Madden, like, every game has server issues at launch. This is obviously the worst example of it so far.
The
thing
is this isn't about a lot of the things that have come out of this is not about EA, it's not about SimCity, it's about the industry in general. If this happened to Valve, I would be saying the same thing. If this happened to Ubisoft, I'd be saying the same thing.
And, you know, it's relevant since there's the rumors about the next Xbox potentially having always on DRM.
And this is what, you know, Daniel brought this up when we discussed that rumor, is the fact is, like, always on DRM, it works if it's always on, but that's from both parties. Like, if my internet's spotty, that's on me, that's on my provider. If your servers are down, that's on you, and that screws up everybody.
If it's a case of, if you want me to be always online, you need to be always online as well.
And, you know, it's just like, there's that, you know, there's the, I mean, there's hackers and stuff. It's not something that's always guaranteeable.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, from what I understand, I haven't tested it out, and I've only seen a few people, because you don't really talk about this in public, is I hear that if you pirate the game, you can play it offline perfectly fine.
I don't think that's the case, because Maxis said that the way the game works is it's kind of like Diablo 3, where game processing is done on the server side.
Yeah.
Which would explain why they had to disable the mode that makes the game go fast, because, you know, it would be more for the service, more maths for the service to churn. So I don't think that's the case. What will happen is eventually we'll have server emulators, because that happens with WoW, happens with Diablo 3. There'll be people that manage to brew up software that emulates a server and you connect to it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just
it's still not a perfect system that works.
It's not a perfect system, and, you know, like, it's always kind of the thing. It's like, I understand the need to combat pirates. I get the fact that piracy takes. I completely agree with that. Piracy takes money, revenue from certain parties. But here's the thing: you don't burn down the forest just for one dude, because you end up killing a bunch of trees. You're screwing over millions of people to potentially find maybe 1-5% of your audience who may or may not be pirate in this game.
And the thing is the best way to deter pirates is to give people who pay features that pirates can't have access to, like multiplayer, for example. But I say that this game's entirely based around multiplayer, but, you know, you have to encourage people to buy. You have to incentivize purchases instead of punish non-purchases.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. And it's not a perfect system. There's no perfect solution. But it's the same thing kind of with the music industry, where it's easy to download music and stuff like that. But with stuff like iTunes, Pandora, Spotify, it's also just as convenient to get it through legal means. There's no hoops to jump through. So if I want a song, I'll download it from Amazon, or I'll usually Amazon. I don't have an iTunes account, actually. I always hated that software, but yeah, the fact is, and this is a good, you know, this is why Steam works. I'm sure Steam gets pirated as well, but I'm sure a lot of us are more likely to buy games from Steam because it's offered at a discount and it's convenient. It's
and
not
I have recently, I recently never paid for music, and then when Google Play cropped up, and you know, I can have all this music that I buy synced to my all my Android phones and stuff, and my computer automatically, and you know. If I buy something from there, it goes right into my cloud drive, and I can just stream it from wherever I am, no matter what computer I'm on. You know, since then I've started buying music because it's convenient for me to do so.
Yeah, and like I said, it's not a perfect solution, but I do think just kind of giving people this option to not have to jump through hurdles to play games would deter piracy, because one of the reasons piracy is prevalent is sometimes it's just a lot easier to get what you need.
Piracy is not a product problem; it's a service problem, and that's a saying that Gabe Newell is known for, and I agree.
Well, I mean, it's a little of both. I mean, there's still going to be people who want something for free, no matter what. It happens, but I think, you know, like, this gives people a reason to say, like, "I'm not going to pay for your product because you're screwing me over when I do pay you." And that's never good. Like I said, I don't advocate piracy. I just think that. This, you know, this whole situation has been bad. But what gets me about this situation, and it always gets me when situations like this happens, is the fact that people go out of their way to defend EA and this practice. Because
weren't you just defending EA last weekend?
I was defending EA differently. I was defending them in the fact that I don't think they do microtransactions any better or worse than any one company does.
Oh, okay.
But
I was just being an ass.
I know, but in this case, and it's not just an EA thing. I've seen this happen with other, you know, gaming controversies. It's like people want to side on the side of the business and not the consumer, when for the most part, 95% of us are consumers, so we should be concerned with the consumer side of things. And, you know, like, there's a lot of people. I sent Jason some of these conversations. People, one, is the people who, the blind defenders, like, oh, you know what, I can pay fine. It must be on your end. Like, you can't have a massive reportage of something like this and just assume that it's other players whose fault this is.
Yeah, that's just ignorant.
Two, are the people who just blindly defend them because it's a practice that happens. Oh, you know, it happens. You know, like, you won't bother yourself with this in a month when it's fine. Which may be true. In a month, we may forget about this. Everybody will have access to the game, or people would have moved on by then. So, you know, servers won't be as full. The problem is that...
It shouldn't happen in the first place.
Yeah, it shouldn't be an issue to get over it or wait it out. I don't buy a movie and decide, oh, I can't watch it today because it doesn't unlock for another week and a half. So I'll just kind of keep the Blu-ray in my collection.
If somebody bought food and the packaging wouldn't open itself until a certain date, everybody would be furious, you know? And, you know, it's not a case of, oh, well, food's mandatory. You need food. You don't need video games. Who cares? You know, the consumer is still being screwed over. If anything, the fact that... It's an entertainment product, and it doesn't matter, makes it worse, because, you know, I shouldn't have to bother. It should just be a case of I open the game and I can enjoy myself.
Yeah,
instead of,
I mean, like,
if it's not mandatory, why are you doing this, you know?
Every other entertainment, you buy a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not needed. And I think, you know, like, I mean, I don't know how they program the game. I don't know how it works. I mean, everything that has come out, it seems like it would just be easier to disable the DRM stuff, at least for now, just so people can play it. Because, you know, if this was maybe a day, if this was launch day, I would kind of understand it. It's been pretty much the entire week, and it's...
Well, it's like Daniel was saying, though, like, it's not really playable offline because of the way it's programmed.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, I assume there's a single-player aspect to it.
Well, no, there isn't.
Well, the single-player is...
Tell the game to do something, and then the game goes off to the server. The server processes the information about how your city changes, and then sends it back to you.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of something else that's been popping up. I don't know if it's been popping up as much, but the few people who have been able to play it, it also seems like it randomly resets your city.
Yeah, because the game will kick you out and it will say the city hasn't been saved properly, so you need to roll back to an earlier version, which may be much earlier, it may not, or abandon it completely. And sometimes it does. Sometimes there have been some people that have just had their cities deleted.
Yeah, so you know that's another thing. So you can't pay the game. If you do pay the game, you risk the chance of losing any progress you make. And it's missing key features, or these features that they wanted to, you know, promote, like on achievements, leaderboards, and stuff like that. I don't get the achievements one personally, but I guess because it has to sync up to the servers all the time.
And probably track what you're doing in specific ways.
That's a weird one.
It's just a non-central thing to disable it.
Yeah. How else have people defended this?
Make money?
Company, right. That's always a terrible one because just because you ought to make money doesn't mean you don't you don't have to treat your customers right. The other one is pay something else because you know if I buy a new game I'm expected to pay something else if it doesn't work and you know not. And the other one, and this is something that always comes up, and this is one I personally hate, is don't complain.
If you pay for something, you have every right to complain about it.
Yeah, that's the one that always gets me. It's like, stop, you know, people don't complain. Stop complaining about it. They know. Like, yes, they know. But if you get them off the hook, like, oh, you know, they know. They'll fix it. No, you keep on their ass until they fix it. Because if there aren't people out there, you know what they say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And if there aren't people out there who are complaining and moaning and whining and stuff like that, then they can rest on their laurels and get it fixed. They, you know, they wouldn't be in such a hurry to get it fixed. So
it's a matter of principle. If I hand you money to do something for me, you have to do it in the best way you can, you know, within reason, you know. But otherwise, you know, I can complain about it because, you know, that's what you promise when you take my money.
Yeah. And that's the thing. As a consumer, that's, you know, like they say, you know, you vote with your wallet. But if you vote with your wallet and then you get screwed over, this is the only way that you can let them know that you aren't the product. I'm curious to see. I doubt this is going to have long-term appeal effect on EA because EA has, like you said, they have gone through this before and they'll continue to go through this. And I'm sure people will continue to buy their games. I think some people may be expect you to buy their games on day one, but you'll still buy it. It might be like once you know everything's set up and stuff like that. The other thing that came out of this was that a lot of stores, I think EA stopped selling it. I think Amazon stopped selling it as well. They stopped selling the digital version for some time until they got the service fixed.
It was only about 6 hours that they stopped selling it.
Amazon's credit, I did see they, when they were still selling it, they had like a notice though that people were having difficulty.
But the thing is like, had this just been like, had the fact that people can't play it and EA, you know, the DRM and EA putting more servers on just not fast enough been the only thing that came with this, you know, I wouldn't think it's as important because this is by far the most botched launch of anything I remember because of the way that sort of the ripple effect that it's had, because you know we've had things like Polygon changing their review scores, which is a completely different issue entirely.
Oh yeah,
I want to touch on that one really. Not really quick. I think it's a very key important.
Yeah, it's an interesting part of this conversation.
It's an interesting part of this conversation, and it's another part that's very multi-tiered. Because I think, you know, Polygon, we'll get to in a second, but the one that I'm kind of curious about, and this kind of came out with, I think, not Game Choice, a Screw Attack, is video games, are they entertainment, are they a service, or are they an art?
Well,
which are three different things.
You can, but that implies that you can have one and neither of the other two, whereas you can have all of those.
Yeah.
And I think there was an article I read asking, should games be reviewed as services? Well, if the game offers a service along with it, or a service is implied to come with the game, then you should. You absolutely should.
Yeah, and in the case of SimCity, I mean, we've spent time already talking about how the service is built into the design of the game, so it definitely makes sense, you know.
Yeah, if the service is required to play... Then the entire game should be judged on the service, because... Yeah. You know, because
SimCity, I mean, you review a multiplayer game based on I mean, that's a service, a multiplayer.
If you've ever said, if you've ever said to somebody, "Oh, don't buy the game for multiplayer because nobody plays it," then that's you judging it as a service. You know, I mean, yes, that service is not hindered by anything the company can do, you know, but it's still something that people need to be aware of. And, you know, you can have games. Games can be art. Games can be services. Art can be services. Art can be games. So, yeah, I think that if it warrants reviewing it as a service, in which case SimCity totally does, because it's all built around a service, You totally should. And I think this harkens back to the Polygon thing, right? They gave the game a 9.5 out of 10. Okay, fine. When they reviewed it, the game worked perfectly. However, when the game came out, it didn't work at all. And so they decided to lower the score to 8 for a game that nobody can play.
And I think eventually it's down to 4 right now.
And yeah, now, it's down to 4 now. Now they pulled it down to 4. It's still a 4 out of 10 for a game that, I mean, yes, some people can play it now, but there are still people out there that haven't been able to touch anything to do with the game. And I think that's just shocking. You know, the game's great, but it doesn't work at all at the moment. And,
well, I think a 4 is kind of fair in that case, because for the people who can get on,
I suppose now, but at the time they instated the 4, it still wasn't working for anybody. And in fact, anything all Polygon have done is cause more problems, because how many games do you see? Like, did they give Rock Band a better? Has anyone given Rock Band a better score as it's gotten more DLC? You know,
I think DLC is different because that's a separate product.
Yeah, I think
but they said, they would change their score if a
this
patch...
This is what we're getting at with this discussion with Polygon. Not necessarily what they did. No, not necessarily that's in 8.4. Yeah, and that's the nature. It's like, how fluid do reviews need to be for games? Because games, as they exist now, are a different product. Like, what you buy at launch may not necessarily be what the game is in 6 months, but is it worth it to revisit the game for a review in that time?
Well, the thing, and this is the thing, is if you do revisit it, how often? How long do you do it for? You know, do you revisit once a month over 3 years? Do you release it?
I don't think it's really that complicated. I mean, games get patches only so often, and especially major patches that will significantly impact it enough to change review score.
Yeah, but talking about games, like if you review a free-to-play game, for example, that's another kind of thing where the whole game is the service. But those games often get patches every week.
So, I mean, does every patch add something? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's kind of the question. It's like, how big of an impact does this need to be for you to kind of revisit the review? And will it be something that is really worth it after a while? Like, even, like, say Resident Evil 6 got a patch that improved a lot of the problems people have with it. Like, is it a big enough concern now, 6 months out?
And that's the thing, is nobody can answer that, because it is for some, it is for isn't for some others, you know. And this is what I mean by it's caused more problems, because, you know, everything around this is really subjective.
Well, okay, so would you have rather they just kept their 9.5 review score of SimCity up? Do you think that would have been a fair review of the game?
But I'm going to answer this. No, I don't think it would have been a fair review of the game, obviously, because people can't play it. However, the thing is the environment that they played the game is different to the environment in which we play the game. And I think that needs to stop.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Jason and I had discussed this week, is that, and I can tell them, I'm going to be completely honest, I'm a hypocrite in this regard, because I don't like the notion of video game reviews that are coming out day of release, because at that point, a lot of people have already committed to buying it, and some of them have already bought it before reviews start hitting. But at the same time, online gaming is such a key part of a lot of games that it's hard to fairly review that before launch, because you're playing under really idealistic standards, where a lot of these cases, I heard this with God of War, I don't necessarily know if this is true, but that people went to an event and played the multiplayer there, and not necessarily, you know, on their PS3 with other reviewers and editors and stuff like that. So
that's fairly common, I think, among games with multiplayer that publishers will hold back.
Gears of War 2, Gears of War 3 happened for Gears of War 3 or 2, one of them.
But that's not going to be the conditions that people are going to play in next
week
when it comes out. And that's the problem. It's like, you know, a better example of this, and I think one that kind of sticks out in my head this generation, is Smash Brothers, where a lot of people said that online was pretty solid and good. And then you kind of get the game and you can't replay because it has so much lag. But nobody went back and said, like, you know, we're going to mark this game down because of its online capabilities, which it should have been. Because that was a huge selling point in the game. So it's one of those things, like, do you hold reviews until after the game comes out so you can test it on the ideal situation, but then you miss out on thousands of clicks because people aren't concerned anymore? Or do you hope for the best and review it ahead of time and just hope that these conditions carry over when people are actually playing the game?
I think, you know, for me, it's, I would rather see them review whatever they can. And, you know, if there's, like, I like the idea of, I mean, you want your review, especially if you're someone who's reading the review to decide whether or not you want to buy it, you want the review, you know, as soon as you can. And, you know, obviously a review can't always be in the ideal state, but if it changes enough that it's significant enough to impact a review, because a lot of times stuff that changes wouldn't really change your score. Like, oh, they fixed a frame rate glitch or whatever. Like, does that really jump a score of 5 points? But
yeah, but I don't, I mean, I think that's true to a degree, but I also think it depends, because there have been games that have launched, and not just EA games, and not just SimCity, where it's not necessarily that you can't play, but because, you know, like, either the servers are overloaded, or, you know, it's very buggy and laggy when there's a bunch of people on it, or you can never find a game, or, right. You know, people find exploits that you wouldn't find. You know, like, a lot of these reviews aren't really done. Like, even when they have these review of these events, it's not really it's like maybe a 6-hour event and not necessarily like the ideal conditions you'd see after playing a game for a week or two.
I think I definitely think that SimCity reviews, right? I mean, I think what ruins this.
So yeah, it's one of those things.
I think what ruins this whole thing is the fact that the industry is very concentrated on pre-orders. So obviously people have to make up their mind about this stuff before reviews come out.
Yeah.
And you know, something like SimCity, which is basically entirely a service, what they should have done is they should have waited until the day of release. And then they should have reviewed it from the day of release forward. But obviously you can't do that, because then you'd have to, let's say you've got something like Call of Duty, then you'd have to do something like review the single player, you know, which usually is okay, but not incredible, and then wait for the multiplayer, and, you know.
Yeah, and there's sites have tried different, like, sites have split single and multiplayer reviews. Sites like IGN and SimCity Review, I think right now is called a review in progress, so there's some sort of review, but it's not finalized yet.
A review is kind of the only place you go to find out whether a game is good or not. I mean, yes, you can watch, like, raw gameplay or something, but, you know, if you want somebody's direct opinions, whereas a review on progress for something like this, you don't even need to go to the review because you get to see it all the time. Oh, I can't play SimCity, you know, yeah, you're adding servers and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I do think the notion of reviewing a game in components, single player versus multiplayer online stuff, I actually think that's a novel approach, because I do think there are still people out there who buy games for single player, and sometimes you might be misled by what, you know, like, a lot of Call of Duty, for example, tends to get pretty decent scores, but a lot of times that's because of the quality of the multiplayer, not necessarily the strength of the single player. So a lot of people might buy that thinking they're getting a good single player game that just kind of turns out to be decent. At the same time, like, if you're a multiplayer-only person, like, do you really want to know about the campaign? And there have been games that have been marked down for having so-so campaigns, so, you know, that shouldn't be a concern to you if you're not going to touch it. I think, you know, it's one of those things where it's just for, because, you know, you can make judgment calls and say, like, okay, you know, Call of Duty people buy for multiplayer, so we review for the multiplayer. And then something like Spec Ops The Line, for example, people buy for the single player, we won't really talk about the multiplayer as much. But is that fair to the consumer? Did I use you too?
No, I'm just thinking. I mean, yeah, it's... I think no one's found a perfect answer for this yet, but...
Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, we kind of harp on this, and the industry kind of big on this as well. It's like, as much as we try to draw parallels, the gaming industry is still radically different than most other industries. It's not, you know, it's not a static product. What I get, what you get, what Daniel get, could be three different, totally different experiences based on what systems we buy it for, what type of connection we have, and what we want out of the game. So there's really no perfect way to review a game yet. Which is why, you know, it's nice that people are trying different stuff, but I think the biggest hurdle, and it's always going to be a problem, I think, especially, it's going to be a bigger problem, I should say, is the internet. We want stuff fast. We want it quirky. We want it early. I don't care about a review 2 days after the game came out. Everybody else can tell me what they think. But at the same time, I want an honest and fair review, but I want it early, and I want it before the game comes out. So there's really no way to reconcile that, really.
And I think it speaks a lot to the nature of the industry, really, with all these, you know, the embargoes that publishers set out, and, you know, the different schemes that they have for delivering the game to you. You know, it's something that, I mean, yes, there's not going to be one answer to it, and because people, like you said, people want stuff quick, they want it now, they want it easy, you know, and. But it's something that people have really got to think about. It's going to be a case of one sort of shape of review doesn't fit everything, and people need to realise that. They need to review certain things in certain ways, you know, based on, is the game a complete service on its own, you know? Is the game sort of, I say product, is, by that I mean something that you can just put in a drive on a console and play regardless, you know? Is it more of a product based thing, you know?
Well, I mean, to be fair to them, and I think to be fair in general, is that that's a very, very new notion for this industry. It's not something, you know, it's something that people are just kind of getting to, you know, this is becoming a thing, and I think it's going to be something that we see more and more next gen. But yeah, it's one of those things that it's new ground for the industry. It's new ground in general. Like, you don't sell movies as a product, and then, you know, sell one movie as a product, sell another one as entertainment. Like, yeah, sure, some of them are vehicles for, you know, merchandising and stuff like that, but you kind of review it as one thing. And I think gaming is kind of breaking up into different groups, and I think what we'll see is probably sites dedicated to one aspect, like games as entertainment, games as art, and games as product. And I think you'll start seeing kind of spinted reviews of that.
But if nothing else, I hope people realize out of this that you need to pay attention to this particular situation, whether you care about EA, whether you care about SimCity or not. It's important because it's going to affect you at some point, you know. You're going to buy a game, maybe the next Tomb Raider game is always online, and you get the same thing, you know, because that's exactly what everybody else is looking at that makes games is going to say, I don't want there to be another SimCity 5.
Well, I mean, at the same time, they're probably going to think that we don't want pirates, we don't want, you know, used games, we kind of want that money, and it's going to be one of those things where we're going to see. I don't necessarily think it's to be this solution, but I think we're going to see a lot of various interesting solutions to the problem next generation, and to see how well they work out, and if it really, really causes any third, any parties really some major ground. You know, like, I saw some of it is a bit hyperbole. I saw some people like, can EA go broke this generation? EA is not a stupid company. They make very, very questionable decisions as a consumer. But that's why they're still in business, is because they know how to make those decisions that will make them money. So I don't see them going broke anytime soon.
Here's an interesting solution to this problem. SimCity 4, which is a game that's 10 years old now, is number 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 on Steam's top sellers list.
Yeah, it's on sale right now. Or no,
it's not even on sale. It's 10 quid, and it's number 17 on the top sellers list. Kind of says something, doesn't it?
And I think what we're going to see here, and this is usually what happens, is that I think not necessarily this one. I think this one will come out till decent. I think the next SimCity will be the one that kind of suffers for this, and we'll probably see a fall. I mean, if they make another SimCity, but I think we'll see the same way that Resident Evil 6 sold just in Resident Evil 5, because Resident Evil 5 wasn't received as well from consumers. So, yeah. Is there any other aspect of this story that we missed out on?
I don't think so.
I just want to make sure we grab it all, because it is a very, very, very interesting... this story, and like you said, it could bode well for the future of this. Well, not bode well, but it can give us a glance into the next 5 or 6 years of this industry.
Because there's nothing to say that this stuff won't happen on the next generation of consoles. At the moment, this seems to be a sort of PC exclusive problem, but it probably branch out to the next generation of consoles. I think we lost her.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the part of the conversation that's in the background. It's, you know,
I mean, it's been a lot of problems that have happened this generation that have been swept under the rug for one reason or another.
Yeah.
My connection's dying here.
We can kind of hear you.
No wonder you took so long to finish Halo. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I've seen people say, oh, like, Sony and Microsoft should be paying attention if they're thinking about this always-on thing, as rumored. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely something to watch going forward. Despite the problems it has, I would imagine it's something we're going to see more of, just because people will think they can do it better. And
it's a shame, because despite this whole always-on DRM thing and the fact that I don't like EA and refuse to buy anything made by EA, I kind of want to play SimCity. I don't really have... Yeah. I haven't really had that kind of urge to play any of the other SimCity games, but I kind of want to play this one.
Right. I'm the same. But it doesn't matter, because I can't, so...
Yeah. Well, you and anybody else who paid for it. But yeah, so I think that's it for our EA SimCity discussion. So we'll leave you with one final thing, and we kind of posted this to some people on Twitter. Sunday afternoon, people were doing this stuff. I want to make sure I get this question right, because I misread it when I asked it. What games do you never tell people you play? And I assume these are kind of like your guilty pleasure games, like people have guilty pleasure movies, or in my case, guilty pleasure, like a whole genre of guilty pleasure movies that my best So yeah, I mean, we gave these two the entire show to think about it, but just some of the answers I got was, I don't even know if this is, I assume this is a genre, Civil War Simulation Board Games.
What?
Wow.
That's incredible.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
That's RG specific too. This one I was actually kind of surprised about. Star Wars The Old Republic.
Oh yeah.
I've heard good things about it.
It's more of the case of, oh, it's a WoW clone, you know. Oh, there's a whole planet dedicated to gays, which is not how you do it, and oh, the free to play sucks and stuff.
Yeah, but there is a good game in there. I would recommend.
This one I find funny. But it's RG, it depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to other gamers, League of Legends.
I can totally understand that. As somebody who has played and quit League of Legends, I can totally understand that.
Is there a secret shame? I thought it was a huge
It's more of
French.
A case... Well, yeah, it's popular, but obviously the community is infamous for being not very... For being very hostile, let's put it that way. And they're games that people get very serious about. It's not very serious. There are times where you make one mistake in a game, and that's it. The whole game can be ruined for one person making one mistake.
So it's a very, very anti-noob frenzy community.
Oh yes, and it's a very, like, even without the community being hostile, it's a very it's not very noob friendly. In the way the game's designed, either. And the same goes for Heroes of New Earth and Dota 2. They're hard games to get into. They're hard games to stick with because they try your patience. And, you know, a lot of the people that play them are very, very hostile towards the way you play.
It's always fun. We have Angry Birds Space, which I'm surprised we get more Angry Bird references to.
Angry Birds Space is actually the better of the...
I agree. I was pleasantly surprised by...
Because my friend was like, oh, I'm going to buy Angry Birds Space on Steam, and I was just like, don't do that. And then he goes, why not? And I was like, oh, look, I'll show you it and I downloaded it on my Nexus 7. And I was like, oh, this is actually a lot better than the normal one, because you have to sort of... account for gravity and stuff. Yeah, it's quite cool.
Yeah. Gravity adds a cool aspect to it. I mean, I think it was done better in Galaxy, but whatever. So what about you two? Did you come up with anything that you are ashamed to tell people you play?
I'm not really concerned. I was actually, if anything, it's Call of Duty, because I know it's really badly. It's more of a case of, like, most of people just like, oh, I don't care. But I don't like Call of Duty, so I feel like I'm really ashamed to admit when I am playing Call of Duty because I don't like it.
Except you decided to share it with us, that you're going to share.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like I have to admit it. Like, I'm sorry, I have sinned, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, I don't know. I mean, any Kinect game, I'm just, in a way. Also, depending on the group of people, Pokemon.
Really? I don't. People know that I've been a Pokemon since it started. I'm buy a 3DS just because of Pokemon. So, you know.
I think Pokemon kind of fits into that the Disney thing, where there's a certain age group from probably like 15 to about like your early 20s where you don't like that because that's a part of your childhood, so you don't mention it.
And or you know, just people who are like gamers, like obviously kind of grew up with it, but.
You want to grow out of certain stuff that you did as a kid to show a sense of maturity, so a lot of people had seen it as a kiddie thing. There are a lot of people like you don't like. I enjoy Pokemon. I don't think it, but I don't. It's one of those things I really try to avoid playing in public for the same reason, because it is kind of seen as a kid's franchise, even though a lot of the fan base are adults because we grew up with it.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose I wouldn't play a Pokemon game in public either, but I think of all the JRPGs I've played, Pokemon is the formula I prefer the most, so...
Yeah. One game I was really ashamed of playing public was Bowser's Inside Story. not because of the game or anything, but because there's certain aspects of the game where you have to throw into the microphone, which I didn't know. So the first time that happened to me, I was on a plane to Seattle. And I'm like, oh, crap, I'm going to have to do this, aren't I? So I'm like throwing jets, hoping my neighbors don't see me.
The guy next to you is like, what the hell is wrong with
this guy? What they need to do is make it so the Phoenix Wright 5, you can only object by shouting objection at your 3DS.
I object.
Yeah, that's going to go for a while. But I mean, I have no problem admitting I enjoy those games. It's just certain games that don't work as well in public for one reason or another. I think for me, and I don't have any issues admitting what I play, but I think what I don't really tell people is how much I enjoy Just Dance or Dance Central. I enjoy any dance game, really.
Yeah, when I said Dance Central is great, I was especially thinking of Dance Central.
Oh, they're great games.
I wouldn't have any trouble admitting it. Like, if the only thing that is on Kinect, it Just Dance is kind of the one thing I think that you can sort of admit to playing, and people won't be like, oh, yeah, okay.
I think people still would be. I think what happened, it's weird, because music games, you know, like Guitar Hero, Rock Band, super cool because you got to play instruments. Dance games, yeah. I think because a lot of people just aren't comfortable with their dancing. I mean, dancing is really...
Hey, I'm horrible at dancing, but that, like, they had the PC World, which is kind of like Best Buy over here, nearest to me. They had Star Wars Kinect running on a 360, it's like, yeah, okay, I'll play the dancing game.
Were you by yourself?
Oh, no, I was with my friends as well.
That's the thing. You never do that on your own.
No, I wouldn't do it on my own.
Exactly, and that's the part of it.
But who would play a dancing game in public like that on their own?
That's my point, though, is that people are ashamed of that. Like, you would have no problem playing Rock Band or Guitar Hero on your own in public. But the minute you say you're going to have to get up there and dance, and you're like, whoa. Let's not go crazy here. And I think because dance is a lot more intimate, and you can, you know, you can be bad at Rock Band, but you still look cool doing it. You can be bad at dancing and look awful doing it. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of dance games. I especially love when they have really, really awful house music. because, and again, you do it with your friends, you do it without alcohol, but, it, you know...
That's because you're trying to not feel as bad about it.
I have no problem dancing sober either. There are two things I don't mind. I don't mind dancing, I don't mind singing, and I sing awfully, as any of my friends will contest. But, you know, it's just fun, and it's goofy and stuff like that. If you don't... Like, I'm not trying to be a backup dancer or anything, I'm just doing it for myself, so... it's just, again, you don't mention the game because that's kind of a no-no for the community. So, yeah. Wait, did Jason ever say his?
Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Slash okay. Kinect games.
Slash Kinect games. So, that will do it for us this week. Next week, I think the God of War Ascension's out this week, right?
Yep.
And I think that's it. Next week, though, is a ton of new games. What is it? It's Gears of War. It's Ego City. It's Monster Hunter. It's BioShock, or is BioShock?
No,
the week
BioShock's
after?
The week after.
There is a lot of games coming out that week. Army of Two apparently is coming out soon as well.
Oh, we already know how good that game's gonna be.
The Walking Dead Survival Instinct.
Oh God. That'll be an interesting one.
I think Luigi's Mansion is out that Sunday. So yeah, it's going to be a big week, hopefully. And Target's having a big buy two, get one free sale, so I might pick a bunch of games then. I'm hoping Amazon price matches it, because I got a couple of bucks and gift cards I want to get rid of. But either way, we'll be back, hopefully, without a SimCity-esque story next week.
Maybe EA won't cause controversy for once.
Controversy creates cash, as a wise man once said. But for... Daniel, Jason, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 103.
Peace.